Good morning and welcome to The Morning Voice. I am Dr. Ed Ackerley. With me in studio is my assistant, Morgan Murphy. Good morning, Morgan.
Good morning.
It's a great, wonderful Friday in Tucson. Going to be close to 80 plus degrees again today. Awesome, awesome. People coming from all over the world to come to Tucson because of our beautiful weather. And to come and get the great food we have here, including those ice slushy drinks and the delicious pizza and so forth. We have somebody with us this morning that has a fantastic success record in Tucson and a familiar person to most every Tucsoner. If you've lived in Tucson for any length of time, you've experienced this guy's business and have seen it and heard about it. And Slice and Ice owner, Ed Irving, good morning.
Good morning, Ed.
Good to see you. So we'll talk about Slice and Ice in just a minute, but let's get talking about you going to the U of A and deciding to come back from Providence, Rhode Island and be a restaurateur business owner in the middle of the desert. So what happened in the 70s that drew you back to Tucson after college to start a business here?
I attended the U of A from 66 to 70, graduated in 1970, and moved back to Providence, Rhode Island with every intention to work for my dad selling cardboard boxes.
Mm.
I didn't like it.
50 years later, that would have been a good business to be in, yeah, but not back then.
It was a good business then, too. It's just, I don't know. When I went to college, I thought I was going to be a big shot.
Right. Didn't want to sell cardboard boxes.
Yeah. And I grew up with Bob Greenberg, and we went to high school together. And we were sitting around kind of bemoaning our existence. I have a degree in business administration from the U of A. Bob went to the URI, University of Rhode Island, has a degree in microbiology. And he had kind of a minor job in the microbiology business, and I had a minor job selling cardboard boxes. And, Rhode Island has a very big Italian influence there.
Right.
And we were sitting in front of an Italian ice shop eating a lemon, which you call here Eegee's, which you call ice now at Slice and Ice, which back there was called frozen lemonade.
Right.
And we were just talking and, like I said, bemoaning our existence. And I said to Bob, I'm going back to Arizona. And he goes, you just spent 4 years there. What's so great about that place? And I said, first of all, it's not cold like here.
Right.
So everything's kind of new and clean. And he goes, yeah, what else? I said, all the girls there are good looking. And he goes, yeah, you want some company?
We're on our way, yeah.
And that basically was the start. I said to him while we were sitting there, he said, well, what do you want to do when you get there? I said, I bet you could sell a lot of this stuff, this Italian ice there. It's so warm there compared to here. And they sell quite a bit of it here. And we started talking about it. And then Bob was talking to his dad, and his dad knew another gentleman whose son had moved to Florida from Providence and went into that business, and he arranged for him to talk with us. Mm. And he explained what we had to do, and we took off, and we landed here in August of 1971. By the end of September, we were in business, took the initial, and Bob's G, spelt it phonetically, EG's, and there it started.
What a history, and EG's has been for anyone that's 40 years or younger, grew up on EG's, and I have a son, my family, but I have a son, middle son, who lives in Minneapolis, and when we pick him up from the airport, he was going to college back there a decade ago or so, he always wanted to stop by EG's, because he grew up on EG's, and he thought that was the greatest thing. So you've done a lot in the community. While you were running a major restaurant chain in Tucson, you also kind of did a lot of work for Catholic Social Service and a lot of community, you and Bob and EG's in particular, but you personally spent a lot of time donating your time and services and gave away a lot of buckets of EG's and so forth over the years. Tell us a little bit about your involvement in the community. You're a guy from Providence, Rhode Island. You come to Tucson, you start an EG's franchise company, and then all of a sudden now you're involved in the community. Why did you get so involved in the Catholic Social Service, the community service and so forth?
The Catholic Community Services was, I kind of fell into that too. I was kind of fell into a lot of holes, and that was not a hole. That was a good hole.
Right.
I called up the Volunteer Action Bureau. Mm-hmm. After that, it was called the Volunteer Center. I read an ad that said, if you have a little time and some skills, you can help out.
Right.
So that day I felt like doing that. I called up and I told them what my skills were, mostly administrative, a little bit about food already. And they sent me over to a place on the south side called Pia Decimo Neighborhood Center. Which, and you mentioned Catholic Community Services, which at that time had an autonomous board of directors and was not under the auspices of Catholic Community Services. I was there before it was, and I was a volunteer. And I showed up there, and I looked, and I couldn't imagine why they sent me there. All these kids running around screaming, and all the teachers, and stuff going on like 100 miles an hour. And I walked in, and I said, hi, you know, I'm the new volunteer. What am I supposed to do? Says, oh, well, and at that time, the programs were different, but they had an after-school drop-in program for junior high school age kids. And they put me in charge of that. And I got to hand out the roller skates and the basketballs. And I brought a bucket of frozen drinks with me.
Right.
Which made me very popular right away. And when it was time for, you know, to end the program for the day, I gave them out. And then later on, one of the other people there knew what they were doing came up to me and said, excuse me, where are the basketballs and the roller skates? And I said, I don't know. Well, you gave him the snack. You always collect those before you give him the snack. I said, I didn't know that. I said, I just gave him the snack. And he says, oh, they're all gone. He says, the only way you can get them back is by you give them the snack. They'll give them back. Otherwise, they keep them.
Right.
And I said, oh, great first day for Ed. Yeah. I lost all the roller skates.
And the basketballs.
I don't know. There was something kind of magic about that place. The place was... Esther Tang was the executive director at that
time. She's wonderful,
And she, you know, she's passed away years ago now. And and then Margaret Kish came in, and I used to keep going. I went there for years.
Right.
I went there. I mean, after a while, I didn't give out the basketballs and roller skates anymore. I did other things.
Yeah.
And that's when a lot of my fundraising skills came in.
Right. He did a lot of that. We're talking with Ed Irving, the one of the founders of EG's, but also now the owner of Slice and Ice. And so you have a great track record in Tucson of helping the community. And, of course, I think there isn't a baseball team, soccer team, basketball team, football team, youth sports organization, youth organization that hasn't of all of my kids at the University of Arizona still talk about having a bucket of EG's and having it be donated by you guys. You guys have just been great, you personally and Ed, Bob being the E and the G. You guys were just great over the last several decades. We want to talk a little bit about Slice and Ice, but what's this motorcycle thing? You're Mr. Motorcycle. What's up with you? I know you were riding motorcycles back 25 years ago. So
I was riding them before that. I don't know. As a kid, I was just mesmerized by motorcycles. Matter of fact, and my dad told me, you know, over his dead body, would I ever get a motorcycle?
Right.
Yeah, and
that's why you've had 50 since then, right?
That's how it works, isn't it?
Yeah.
And when I was 16 years old, I conned a guy who was a little older into signing for one. I didn't tell my dad about it. And, you know, I always had worked for my dad, so I always had some money in my pocket.
Right.
Dollar an hour added up really well back then. And I bought a used 50cc Honda. I had it about 2 weeks before my dad found it. That was quite a lecture that time, but my dad was a pretty gentle guy. And after I became an adult and I had nobody to stop me, actually when I was at the university here, still heavily influenced by my dad, I lived in a place called the College Inn over on Speedway near Campbell. I think it's now called Babcock
Hall. Correct.
That was a private place for university men to live at that time. It was really a great place.
Yeah.
Anyways, one of my neighbors there in his room was just dancing around. I said, hey, what's going on, man? And he goes, I graduated. I thought I was going to flunk this class, and I graduated. Hey, you want to buy a motorcycle? I said, what do you got? And he had a 305 Yamaha. I said, what do you want? He said, $100. I said, yeah, I'll take it. So I had that. I rode it for a while, and then I saw an accident. I got cold feet, and I stopped. Mm-hmm. And then later on, I kind of got interested again. my first place of business was at Speedway in Craycroft, and it was next door to Art Gewurz's gas station, and there were a bunch of guys in there who went dirt biking in the afternoon after their shifts, and I started going with them, and then Bob started coming too, and we bought a couple of dirt bikes, and we did that. And I used to really get bruised up, and I decided, you know, if you ride on the street, you don't fall off as much. And if you do, that's just the end of it.
Right.
But I'm tired of
falling in the dirt.
I never got a fracture from it, but I sure sprained a lot of stuff and scraped a lot of stuff. And, then I got I went through a few motorcycles, but most of it was just around town. I got off the dirt on the road, but just around town. And one day I got the wild day, I wanted a Harley. So I went over to Buzz Benelli's Harley shop, used to be on 22nd Street, just west of Craycroft, and walked in and bought a, this is 1985, bought a 1985 Harley Sportster 1000cc shovel head. Yeah. It was gorgeous. Yeah. It was gorgeous. And the Buzz, who was the owner, it wasn't so corporate in those days.
Right.
He was the owner. And he sat me down, he talked to me, he said, "Do you have friends that ride?" I said, "Not really. I don't know anybody who has a street bike, and I have one now." He said, "Stop by here on Sunday mornings. People just meet up here. They divide into three different groups. The people who just want to stand there and stare at their bikes, the people who want to go down the diner on the corner and have breakfast, and the third group goes for a ride."
Long one, yeah.
And he said, "I'd like to see you keep riding. And if you meet people with bikes, it'll become a social thing as well as an adrenaline rush." So I showed up that Monday. Very first rest stop. I saw another guy there who had the same exact bike as mine. His was light blue, mine was dark blue, but otherwise they were identical. So I pulled over and parked next to him, and he turns and looks at me, and he goes, "Nice bike." I go, "Nice bike," to him too. And he introduced himself. His name was Paul. And we started talking, and he says, "So who services your bike?" I said, "It's brand new. I've only had it a week." And he goes, "Well," he said, and this tells how long ago this was. He says, "This is my attitude." He says, "You can pay somebody $35 an hour." That really dates me. To work on your motorcycle and maybe break it. Or you can work on it yourself and break it for nothing. And I said, I really don't have the skills to do that. And he goes, "Well, you're in luck because I do." And he said, "When you're ready for a service, give me a call." Very friendly towards me, and we got together, and he showed me how to change the oil on my bike, and he said, "Now let's go for a ride." And he was experienced. That was his first Harley.
Right.
But he was experienced, and he really introduced me to motorcycling. And he put a wrench in my hands. And actually, as our motorcycling careers, both of them, it has ended for many reasons. Paul would drop his bike off for me to service it. And he had wrecked one that I had sold him, one of my old ones. And, I have pictures where we just took it completely apart and put it back together.
That's great. Great story.
450,000 miles later.
Oh, my goodness. When we get back, we'll talk a little bit more about Slice and Ice. We're talking with Ed Irving, who is the E behind EG's and now the owner of Slice and Ice, which is a wonderful restaurants, plural, here in Tucson. We'll come back and talk a little bit more about that. You're listening to The Morning Voice on KVOI. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I am Dr. Ed Ackerley. With me in studio is my assistant, Morgan Murphy. Good morning, Morgan.
Good morning.
We're enjoying a good conversation with Ed Irving, the owner and proprietor of Slice and Ice, which is a wonderful, wonderful place. If you haven't been, you need to get there, and soon you'll get to go to some other locations. There's a couple now, and there'll be some more coming online. So, Ed, tell us a little bit about Slice and Ice and how it all got started and how you picked up selling pizza and sandwiches and your frozen drinks.
Well, I retired in 2006.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's when EG's was sold.
I remember that. Remember that like it was yesterday. Yeah,
it seems like it was yesterday.
Yeah.
In 2006, and a couple of years later, Bob, first of all, Mr. G, I call Bob Mr. G.
Right.
Okay, so Mr. G and I, we're still business partners.
Right.
We own real estate together. We talk every day.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We lifetime friends.
Right.
And but he plays golf and I don't. And the motorcycle riding is what I would rather be doing, but right. I ran into a few, you know, your body gets old and you can't do certain things anymore. That was one of mine, especially when I went blind in my right eye while I was riding a motorcycle. Right. Anyways, make a long story even longer, I took on another business partner. His expertise was real estate and mine was supposedly restaurants. And we just started fooling around a little bit. We made a little bit of money. And I owned a, I bought a building. It was a former McDonald's restaurant and it was full of equipment and seating and stainless steel. And my partner's name's David. And he owned a couple of properties that had a pizza joint on one of them and a Subway on the other.
Mm-hmm.
And they were raising those buildings because of the expansion at the university. That would be the expansion upward.
Right, right, right.
And he said, you know, he says, we could buy all this equipment in this pizza place and maybe in the Subway for practically nothing, you know,
right.
because they have to move out and they want to sell it. And he said that, you know, what the owners of one of them was saying that, nope, they're offering us pennies on the dollars for this
right.
thing. And so anyways, you know, I immediately said, the last thing I need is more used restaurant equipment. And he said, well, anyways, it was almost free. Actually, a lot of it was free, came.
Right.
And he said, okay, I've been doing all the work. I said, well, yeah, but we've been doing things that I don't do.
And
things you do very well, David. And he says, it's your turn. He says, we got all this restaurant equipment. Oh, by the way, the first thing David and I had done as partners is we bought a Kentucky Fried Chicken at 1905 West Grant Road.
Right.
It's not there anymore. It's now a Slice and Ice.
Slice and Ice, right.
Okay, and we were the landlords to the Kentucky Fried Chicken for 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had a tenant there who was only there 2 years, and the building was empty, and we're looking at it, and that's when David said, time for you to get
your
to
turn,
work.
Yeah.
It's your turn. So I just really looked at the equipment we had. We had a pizza oven and all the accoutrements that go along with a pizza oven. We had all the equipment that came out of the Subway, mostly seating, stainless steel out of both of them. Right. And I had this McDonald's building full of McDonald's stuff. So, you know, there was a little gal interviewed me the other day for social media.
Right.
And, you know, I told her that's not, they call me Dr. Frankenstein
yeah.
because I took all these pieces of different beings, because restaurants have a
right.
life,
right?
And put them together, and that's where Slice and Ice came from.
That's great. And so you sell at you have a couple locations. You have that original, which is over there on Grant Road, 1905 West Grant. You have one coming soon at Tankerville Road. That's your newest one, right?
Yeah, that building I built on Tankerville in 1978.
Holy smokes. And so you've owned it ever since.
I've owned it. It was an Eegee's.
Right, right. And now it's going to convert to Slice and Ice.
Yeah. Well, it is. It's an empty building now.
Yeah.
And it is in the process of being converted to Slice and Ice. But it's not open yet.
Right,
it'll
right.
probably be about 90 days more.
Right.
It'll
great.
Open there.
And some future expansion maybe in the area, depending on how things go with the new store and your all magic happening in
my life expectancy.
Yeah.
Because I'm in less than 90 days, I'm going to be 77 years
yeah,
old.
Yeah, but you look great. You look like you're 55, so that's great. So tell us a little bit about the menu of what you have to offer. You have pizza, obviously, the traditional wonderful pizzas.
Well, we have something unique about our pizza besides the taste. The uniqueness is we do a very, very thin pizza.
Right.
A 3-minute cooked pizza. So we have a drive-in pizza, which
right.
is pretty much unheard of. You can order at the drive-thru window and in 3 minutes have your order. And we do that by the thinner the crust, of course, the faster
right.
you can bake it.
Right.
And we have a stone oven, which I'm probably going to change in the next unit because
right.
I'll get to pick the one that we'll
right.
have.
Right. Right.
And there's the pizza component of it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I already knew how to make sandwiches.
You do a lot of sandwiches, right?
But because of the pizza, we had a lot more ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the restaurant business is very much like Tetris, just putting pieces together.
Right, right.
So when you look at that, you know, I said, wow, I can really do some unique things with sandwiches, and
right.
and we did, and we started out with just a couple, and now I've got a whole page full here.
Yeah. Sweet Baby Ray's barbecue chicken, you have a ranch chicken, you have hot chicken, you've got turkey, Italian subs, you've got classic turkey, you've got the Hot Link Hero, which is beef hot link and peppers and onions. That sounds delicious.
Pretty good.
Italian three meat, the meatball, traditional meatball, tuna.
That's Auntie Estelle's tuna.
Auntie Estelle's tuna.
My Aunt Estelle, that's my mother's sister.
And of course, you have the famous Ed Irving and Bob Greenberg fries. Fries is a big deal with you guys, and that's delicious, yeah.
Fries, going the store on Tancredi, that's right. Going to be converted to a slice and ice. That is the first store that EG's had that had French fries.
Oh.
And that resulted with a conversation from Bob and myself, because we used to sell potato chips.
Right.
Because sub shops don't sell French fries.
Right.
I'm not sure why, but they sell French fries, probably because the cost of putting in the
right.
equipment and the rest right. of the infrastructure for fries. Well, in about 1977, Bob and I were doing what we do best, hang around and BS.
Yeah.
And Bob said, why do you think all those places sell fries? It's so expensive to put a fryer in and the gas service and all the fire retardant
right.
stuff you have to do. And I looked at him, I go, I'm going to guess there's a lot of money in French fries.
Yes.
And we started paying attention. And, you know, the reference point is to always go look at McDonald's and
right.
see what they're doing. And I watched them for a while and saw they sold hamburgers, they sold shakes, they sold chicken nuggets. But with each of those things, they sold fries. And I realized they're in the French fry business.
Right. The other
everything
stuff
else,
is ancillary.
Yeah. Everything's ancillary.
Yeah.
So that store on Tancredi became the first store that had French fries. After being open 2 months, we looked at each other and said, we better go see the banker.
Yeah.
Borrow some money. And
I know a lot of people. I know a lot of people that went to EG's because of the EG's, but I know a lot of people that went to EG's because of the fries. The fries are amazing, and your slice and ice fries are the same. You know, your frozen.
They're not the same.
They're not the
you're
same.
You're only about halfway out, but they're not the same.
And we've got the traditional frozen drinks, orange, pineapple, strawberry, lemon, watermelon, lime, all those wonderful flavors, plus another 20 more that you have. So, Ed, it's been a pleasure being with you this morning and talking about Slice and Ice. We're going to get you back because your buddy Chip's going to call us, and we're going to get you back on the radio again. We appreciate what you've done for the city of Tucson over the years.
Easy enough. 1905 West Grant between Silver Bell and I-10 on Grant.
Great. And new locations coming soon. Thank you so much, Ed. It's been great talking with you. Good friend. Ed Irving from Slice and Ice. You're listening to The Morning Voice on KVOI. We'll be back after the break. Good morning and welcome back to The Morning Voice. It was so great to talk with Ed Irving from Slice and Ice. What a wonderful, wonderful person he is, and what a great organization he's building. He built EG's from the ground up with his partner Bob Greenberg, and now he's at Slice and Ice and building another dynasty, and it's a great place. I encourage you to go there on Grant, just west of the freeway. With me in studio is my assistant, Morgan Murphy. Good morning, Morgan.
Good morning.
My brother, Bill Ackerley, is here. We've got three young ladies here with us. Hi, guys. How are you? Yeah, they got wide open eyes because we're talking with their dad. Their dad is Moises Gomez. Good morning.
Good morning.
You and I go back a ways. Man, you are Mr. Volunteer, I guess is what I call you, Mr. Volunteer. And one of the things you do is, Moises is with Local First Arizona. So before we do that, tell us about these lovely young ladies that are here with you.
Yeah, Mr. Volunteer, that's what they think I do for a living, right?
Yeah.
You know, since I'm involved in so many things. But Emily is here with us, Calista and Molly. My
great.
Two older kids are currently on a youth retreat with my wife.
Great.
Gone for the weekend, so...
Party girls, you get to have a party with dad, huh? That's great. You're all so cute. So welcome to The Morning Voice. So Moises, before we get started talking a little bit about the Local First, let's just talk about you in general. You've been in the car business, you've been in the solar business, but all of it is focused on servant leadership to the community. And so just tell us a brief about your background and all the good things that you've done since to this point.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it actually stems from even earlier. Entrepreneurship has been a huge thing in my family. My mother's family owned a furniture store in Mexico. My father's had quite a few businesses from food trucks to being a subcontractor himself, who I worked with at a very early age.
Right.
And then, you know, I took upon actually early in my career is working with a nonprofit with Tucson Youth Development.
Right.
Which was great. It was great for me. I really loved working with at-risk youth. You know, I had an interesting, youth myself where I felt like I can really relate and help. That ended in about 2008, 2009 because of the housing market crash, right? So that's what kind of catapulted me into, okay, I got to go into the private sector.
Right.
I mean, the doors to O'Reilly Chevrolet opened up at the time.
Oh, my goodness gracious. I just contributed to their bottom line this week. I got my Tahoe fixed at O'Reilly. You've done a great job of of building that business up.
It's 100 years, right?
Right. I saw Buck, by the way, Buck O'Reilly at the store this week, actually. I just saw him. He looks great. Buck looks great.
Yeah, an amazing family, an amazing organization. I mean, they've been part of the community, like I said, for 100 years. So it was just a privilege to be a part of it and contribute the little bit of time that I was able to for about 9 years. So I would call that, a big part of education for me in terms of how business works. And then those three models that, I got the privilege of working with Rob Draper directly and following that, number one, honest and ethical, number two, customer service, and number three, profit, which is, very important in terms of securing, a sustainable, successful future for any organization. Right. So I was able to take the time that I learned, everything from there to take on with business development and do some consulting. On the side from time to time with different businesses. My father and I, we started a small restaurant in our family in Rocky Point. That's over 10 years now. I worked in the solar industry for a solar company. I now have my small solar electric company and it was just, those things of me wanting to have that entrepreneurial spirit of going on. But within all my volunteer work, on the side I would say I was a fan of Local First Arizona since about 2013.
Right.
Right. About supporting local businesses. And, about 2 years ago, they reached out and I had been reaching out about saying, hey, I want to do more things in Tucson, And they said, well, how about you help us and join us?
That's
right.
Great.
So I started as a, contractor for them, they through my consulting. But I ended up not having enough time to, work with them as much, it's just a lot of work through Local First. There's a lot of local business, a lot of help. So, they offered me a full-time position and I said, yes, I jumped in with both feet and we're doing a lot of great work right now.
That's great.
Yeah.
And so, you also a volunteer, with the Arizona Bowl. You do a great work there. You're in one of the mucky mucks, I call you, an important person with the Arizona Bowl. And you do work with, you're the vice president of Tucson Young Professionals, which is, tell us a little bit about that group. That's a group of 1,000 young professionals, right?
Yeah. So Tucson Young Professionals, one of the largest, organization of its kind, right, with young professionals. So we just focus on the retention and the building of our young professionals, to focus on staying here in Tucson and Southern Arizona, right? To get the great education, from our great university here at the U of A, and also stay our other professionals that might think that, there's not enough to do in Tucson.
Right.
So we're focusing on building, great systems, professional development programs that are catered to seeing what's out there. And bringing other community, businesses and organizations, to support that cause.
You did a great job. You spoke a couple of weeks ago to my University of Arizona Communications and Leadership class, 72 students. You came in and did a great presentation about volunteerism and servant leadership is what you talked about, and being authentic, being humble, and being vulnerable, and being putting yourself forward. You're the epitome. You live that. You live that in your daily life, don't you?
Yeah. I really do. I think it just goes from, understanding that, as much as capable as I am of doing these things, nothing really matters if we're not doing it for the right people, right? Our youth, our kids,
right?
Our future. And then we can't do it on our own,
right?
You talked about the Arizona Bowl briefly. I'm part of the Blue Blazers, right? Mm-hmm. And I've been doing that for 3 years. And I mean, it takes a lot of us. I mean, we're a little bit over 100 volunteers that are putting together all this outreach, all for one focus. And then that's the prosperity of Tucson and Southern Arizona.
Right. You're helping with the World Baseball Classic right now. That's happening right now, actually. So
yeah, so along Arizona Bowl, along with Visit Tucson and a couple of other organizations, Tucson Baseball Classic, are supporting these efforts to showcase a tremendous event that's going to start this weekend, right? You know, where we have an opportunity to show that, hey, Tucson does have, you know, the community to support this.
Right. World-class baseball in Tucson, yeah.
Correct.
Yeah, and the Blue Blazers, you know, you guys work year-round. It's not just the couple days before New Year's to have a bowl. The Blue Blazers and the Bulls working year-round, and all of the money that you guys raised from the bowl game goes right back into the community, and you donate it all back. And so throughout the year, you're working on a variety of different things. So you are really, you know, it's great to have you at the U of A and have you talking to my students, talking about servant leadership, because you are definitely one of the epitome of that. If I know of any people that volunteer, you're one of the ones that I look at it. And with Local First Arizona, there are lots of small businesses in Tucson. You know, when you look at Phoenix, they have some Fortune 500 companies up there and some big international and national companies. In Tucson, we have a few, but the majority of our businesses in Tucson are small businesses, aren't they? Medium and small business.
Correct.
And some might estimate that at maybe as 20,000 businesses, that everything from a one-man band and working out of a house to businesses that have 40, 50, 100 employees. So Local First Arizona is an important resource for those businesses, right?
Absolutely. Small businesses are the backbone of our community, not in just Tucson, but across the country. And, you know, Local First being the largest, you know, coalition for local businesses in the country, we really focus on building those equitable systems where they're able to compete with these larger organizations within their communities. That's the biggest point, right? We want to focus on economic development throughout the state, and we see that the best way to do that is supporting our local businesses on the right startup, you know, for these entrepreneurs who want to get a business launched. What's the right way to do it? You know, by providing direct technical assistance, workshops, and even those businesses that are already building and maybe want to, you know, make sure they're doing things right or want to grow. And even in the end, you know, some of these small businesses that we have is how do we ensure that the ones that have existed for such a long time have the right, understand what the right way to transfer that business over to the next generation.
Correct. Yeah, which is really important. Bill and I, I'm looking at my brother Bill. We've been doing this for 47 years now, and we're going to transfer it to Morgan. She doesn't know it yet, but we're going to transfer the business to Morgan. Well, when we come back, we'll do some more talk with Moises Gomez from Local First Arizona, volunteer extraordinaire, and his three lovely young assistants who are with him here this morning. They're bright-eyed and ready to go today. They're beautiful young ladies. You're listening to The Morning Voice on KVOI. We'll be back after the break with Moises Gomez from Local First Arizona.
Little something for the kids in the studio today. Don't get a chance to play this one too often, Ed. Of course, they're too young to ever even have any idea.
Welcome back to The Morning Voice. Both Moises and I are smiling. This is great. His lovely young lady daughters are with him this morning. This is Moises Gomez. He's with Local First Arizona, helping small businesses grow and prosper in our beautiful city of 78 degrees today. A great time to, hey kids, make sure that dad takes you to get a slice and ice this week. That was our first guest, and they're a wonderful company here in town, and they've started EG's, and now they've started a new organization. And that's what you're all about, is helping companies start and grow and prosper. So let's talk a little bit about financing and banking and how important that is when you have an entrepreneurial idea or you're starting a business or you've been in business a long time. Local banking is really important, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when we talk about Local First, we talk about putting your dollars, you know, within local businesses, right, to support the community. But another very important aspect is where you deposit that money as well.
Right.
We really want to focus on creating that sustainable economic, you know, importance of putting your money where with, let's call it, you know, credit unions who support the same causes we support in the community. And typically that's the main thing. We have we partner with a lot of credit unions that have supported a lot of our programs, where, you know, for instance, like Vantage West right now has supported one of our programs for Fuerza Local, which is focused on supporting Spanish speaking preferred entrepreneurs, business owners, you know, and that's one of the just many reasons on why it's important to support, you know, local banks and credit unions.
Right. And that Hispanic angle of this is really important. As you know, as we know, there's a lot of entrepreneurs that are have restaurants and small stores and business consulting businesses, all sorts of different things that are serving the Hispanic population as well as the general population. That's important. Let's talk a little bit about sustainability and how Local First Arizona assists businesses with adopting sustainable practices, green practices, and what resources you have for that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that's one of the things I focus on the most, right? Being, you know, having some background in energy and solar, and having a good understanding of the importance of sustainability. We focus on financial sustainability, right? A lot of these small businesses, you know, have a lot of, you know, pain points that they're trying to address within their business, whether it be at home or whether it be in their you know, a brick and mortar, where they might want to, you know, find maybe some marketing dollars, some dollars for some improvements or that new hire, and it's difficult to find. So our approach is, hey, let's look at it from a sustainable, lens and see, could we save, you know, some money on the energy cost, on the water cost, on your transportation, on your waste? So we offer, you know, a great program called our Green Business Bootcamp. And this workshop is set up of 7 weeks where we're able to sit down with, and we do it, it's statewide currently. Mm-hmm. This originally, by the way, started here in Tucson. Right. We used to do the in-person boot camps, and that's what we're working on doing. But we have an in-person in Camp Verde, and we have, you know, our statewide throughout the state where we've had people from Southern Arizona, all the way to Flagstaff, you know, participate in everything in between. But these workshops really focus on, you know, how to reach those goals. If it's water, if it's waste, if it's transportation, if it's energy that they wanna find ways. We bring in industry experts, right, from our local communities that can help us find out what ways we can do those in. And when our businesses are able to identify a project that they might want to take on, we also help them find that financing, that at a lower interest rate where it's more character based. And our partner here in Southern Arizona is CIC, Community Investment Corporation.
Love them. They're fantastic.
So they've helped put together a green loan fund for us, which is pretty amazing. So we're not just talking about, hey, you should do this, or trying to make people feel bad like by not being sustainable. This is something that we can actually support you with and help you through and through.
That's amazing. That support is really important. And you know, as you're building a business, it's good to know that there's someone you can go to help you with the knowledge and the expertise and the things to, so that you can concentrate on your business and then get the knowledge that you need to make that happen instead of you having to run around and do that. We're talking with Moises Gomez from Local First Arizona on The Morning Voice. Let's talk a little bit about the local learning lab and your on-demand business resources that you have and what you can help small businesses do with the resources you have available.
Absolutely. So, but just one quick thing on the green business side. Yeah. We also have what's called a green business certification.
All right.
And I don't want to miss that one. It's just as important. We already have, you know, organizations and businesses in Tucson and Southern Arizona that have already paved the way the way in sustainability.
Right.
Our green business certification, you know, gives them that recognition. It's a statewide recognition, and we're able to showcase what they've already done. And they can also support other businesses through that Green Business Bootcamp. But those are the two different programs. But yeah, you know, Local Learning Lab, extremely important. You know, we talk about, you know, barriers of local business owners being able to access certain types of information, and you know, making it easy accessible is having our Local Learning Lab, where we have industry experts from all over the state, you know, focus on different parts of what could be needed in business that they can go in and view at their time. You know, it's mm-hmm. video on demand that they're able to get, you know, ideas of to start having that conversation within their team internally. Right. And then they can reach out to us if they want to and work one-on-one with us. But if they don't have the time to do that, there's at least that information there to help them out and support them.
And you're a good connector too. So if someone has a special need, you can connect them with people that, for instance, banking, but you have a great resource of being able to connect them, not only in Tucson, but Arizona statewide, if it's something that's unique to, say, the Phoenix Valley or something. You guys have a great network of reaching out and helping businesses connect with the right people to help them grow their business.
Absolutely. That's what it's all about. It's all about connections. You know, when people ask, you know, what makes Local First so great, it's our members. It's a coalition. It's the individuals, the businesses that we help. As soon as we help a business out, a local business, I mean, they turn around and they just want to help 10 more.
Right.
So that's what it's all about.
Are there some programs coming up that that we should be aware of?
Yeah, so for everything that we're doing, so we already talked about the World Baseball Classic qualifier, but we also have tomorrow Ignite 520 for Tucson Young Professionals, which is a great development program, and then we also have our Vegan Night Market that's going to happen tomorrow evening or tomorrow night as well.
If someone wanted to get in touch with Moises Gomez, how would they do that? Go to Local First Arizona?
Local First Arizona, yep.
Great. It's a great pleasure to have you here. Girls, go to Slice and Ice this weekend and visit Ed's place. You got a wonderful dad. He's a wonderful man. We really appreciate him and what he does for the community. You're listening to The Morning Voice on KVOI. We'll be back with a Wonder Series after the break. Thank you for listening. Stick around, and thank you, Moises, for being here today.
Thank you, Ed. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Welcome back to The Morning Voice here on KVOI. I am Dr. Ed Ackerley. My assistant, Morgan Murphy, is with us this morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
My brother, Bill, is sitting over here with us, too. We produce this show, The Morning Voice, which comes to you 5 days a week, 7 to 9 a.m. We have Lydia Ronda will be here on Monday. General Ted Maxwell will be here on Tuesday. Grant Kruger on Wednesday. Tom Moulton on Thursday. And on Fridays, especially in our second hour, we celebrate Wonder, the good things going on at the University of Arizona, research and outcomes and student learning and all the wonderful things that are happening. Morgan, you're just about ready to graduate. You got about 90 days left, and you'll be Master of Marketing graduate. It's pretty amazing, isn't it? Spring
has
sprung.
It's very exciting, yes. Yeah.
And we just have to keep you in Tucson and keep you working for The Morning Voice and for Ackerley Advertising. That's trying to keep good talent in Tucson is good. And I guess that's what our next guest has done a great job of recruiting, 33 different doctors who help him in his study. Dr. Sai Partha Sarathi, he is the University of Arizona Health Sciences Department. He is actually what he is. He really works at the Health Sciences Department, but Morgan, isn't he actually our best booker of talent
yes,
for
he
the
is.
Morning Voice?
Yes, he is.
We've had a half a dozen of his doctors on talking to us about health and science and the different things that he has under his charge, and we appreciate his excellence. So welcome to you, and good morning to you.
Good morning.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about, March is National Sleep Awareness Month, so we'll start to kick that off tomorrow, and it's about how important sleep is. Just in general, let's just talk, before we get into some of the funded clinical trials that you're going to be working on, why is sleep so important for human beings, and I guess for all living life, but why is it so darned important for human beings?
Yeah, I think if you take a step back, I mean, every living organism sleeps. I mean, flies sleep, dolphins sleep, and we sleep for a third of our lifetime. I mean, it's about 8 hours in a 24-hour day, so you'd want to think that there's got to be something really important that we spend a third of our life sleeping. And that's the fascinating part about sleep is that it's very cross-cutting. It touches not just the brain, which is where it sort of is orchestrated.
Right.
But it's important for the healing and nourishment of pretty much every organ in the body.
Mm-hmm.
And when you connect it to something called circadian rhythms, which is essentially the rhythm, the biological rhythm that we have, which means that we sleep at night and we're awake during the day, which is our normal habit, every cell in our body keeps time. And that keeps a biological rhythm. Sleep is one of the manifestations of that. So if you dig deeper, if there are cellular machinery for how our cells keep time, and we have a clock right in the middle of the brain, which is the master clock, that orchestrates all of the body's functions. So we are all integrated, and so that is very fundamental to life. And you see that in planktons in the ocean, and you see that in fruit flies, and you see that in humans, and that's why it led to the Nobel Prize in medicine, that this sleep and circadian rhythms, which is what we're doing research on, is very, very fundamental to the functioning. And if that goes awry, it causes inflammation, and inflammation causes cancer and heart disease, which are one of the two biggest killers.
Right. And so every human being, no matter who they are, and I know as people age, they tend to sleep a little less, maybe perhaps, than they did when they were little kids. And but 8 hours, 6, 7, 8 hours is really important, isn't it, to get a full night's sleep?
Yeah, and it differs by age. Mm-hmm. So, when babies are born, they sleep about 14, 15 hours, and they have an ultradian cycle. There are multiple cycles within a particular day. But then when in a young adult, they get to about 8 to 9 hours of sleep. But someone in their 50s probably gets about 7 hours. And then as we age over 65, you're talking more about 6 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So the consensus is that in general, adults should get more than 7 hours of sleep. And that's where the sweet spot is, so to speak. But it is quite normal for healthy aging individuals to sleep less than 7 hours. But the hope is, how can we improve the right. sleep in them so that we can maybe help improve their functioning and their quality of life?
And during that 7 hours or 8 hours or 6 hours of sleep, it's really important that they get some deep sleep and that they're not interrupted and that there's not devices going off or leaving the TV on while you sleep, those kinds of things. You need to be in a dark room, you need to be asleep, and you need to get into that deep sleep, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And sleep is like food. You not only need sufficient quality of food, quantity of food, but you also need sufficient quality of food.
Right.
So similarly, sleep, you know, you need sufficient quality and quantity. And some may even say timing, because if people are doing shift work and sleeping during the day and working at night, that's not healthy for them in the long run.
Right.
That actually increases the risk for cancers.
Right.
So there's research studies showing that shift work disorder can actually be carcinogenic.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's important to have sufficient quality, quantity, and timing of sleep.
Right. We're talking with Dr. Saiparthi Sarathy from the University of Arizona Health Sciences Department about sleep and the sleep studies that he and his colleagues do there and highlight sleep health and how important sleep health is. You have a couple of NIH-funded sleep clinical trials coming up. Let's just talk about the first one, which is the U of A Health Sciences Center for Sleep, Circadian, and Neurosciences Research in Long COVID Research and Excessive Sleeplessness. And so people who have long COVID coming out of the COVID crisis might have insomnia or excessive sleeplessness. And could you talk a little bit about what this study is going to concentrate on?
Yeah, it's focusing on the consequences of long COVID. Most people have a constellation of brain fog and what we call post-exertional malaise. I mean, they have severe fatigue that's aggravated by even minimal activity, and it's quite dysfunctional. I mean, it just takes them out of the workforce and the quality of life plummets. But one of the key aspects of that is they also have problems with sleeping well at night. They manifest insomnia, and some of them may actually be excessively sleepy during the day. So they are excessively sleepy when they drive.
Not good. Yeah.
Yeah. And so the problem is some of these people think that, well, I was sick, so I'm sort of healing and recovering, and this is just the new normal. But it isn't. It is identifiable. It's actually treatable. So we're doing two clinical trials combined, rolled into one, which is essentially for people with insomnia, we give them insomnia treatment. And for people with excessive sleepiness, which we also call hypersomnia, we give them treatment to keep them more alert and awake and more, you know, cognitively intact.
So this is going to be one of the studies that the NIH is helping you. Let's keep our fingers crossed for those national funded programs that are under the current situation nationally. The second study that you're working on is the sleep apnea in Alzheimer related patients and blood tests. What do you hope to discover in that particular study?
Yeah, so researchers in NYU, found that people with obstructive sleep apnea, which is where people start snoring, stopping to breathe, and their oxygen count goes down in their bloodstream, and that means less oxygen to the brain, and the brain is starved of oxygen at night, so they wake up feeling tired and sleepy. Researchers at NYU found that these individuals have a protein in the bloodstream which is indicative of onset of Alzheimer's disease that's elevated. And it elevates at a much rapid rate in people with sleep apnea than without sleep apnea. So this protein is there in all of us. The brain does undergo certain damages. It's something called neurofibrillary tangles, or amyloid protein. And some of these amyloid protein precursors are building blocks of these amyloid proteins are streaming through our bloodstream in everybody, all of us. Mm-hmm. But in some people, it is elevated, and sleep apnea seems to confer that increased risk. And so that's what they found. But now with other centers, which is, NYU, University of Pittsburgh, University of California, San Francisco, and us here at the University of Arizona, all of us are doing a clinical trial where we're offering free diagnostic tests for sleep apnea and treatment for sleep apnea, and seeing whether we can reduce the increase in trajectory of these Alzheimer proteins. So people don't need to have Alzheimer's to participate in the study. People who suspect they have sleep apnea or people who have had sleep apnea who are not currently using treatment for the past 1 year are eligible to participate, and then we'll follow them over the next 2 to 3 years, and we offer them free treatment, not only in the form of CPAP, but also we have a dentist who can actually fit them with a dental device, mm-hmm. so that we can actually treat their sleep apnea and see if the trajectory of these proteins diminishes, so that to show that we can actually reduce the risk for developing cognitive impairment.
So you have two really important sleep clinical trials going on. You have the long COVID insomnia and excessive sleepiness. And then the second one is with sleep apnea and Alzheimer-related proteins. So you're looking for candidates who would like to participate in either of these two studies. So how would they go about reaching out to you to be involved in these two very important studies?
I appreciate that. So for the long COVID study, if people have insomnia or excessive sleepiness after COVID, they can call 520-626-1590. That's 520-626-1590. And for people who are interested in getting this sleep apnea diagnosed and treated, or treated if they have a prior diagnosis of sleep apnea and haven't started treatment, which is a two-year-long study, they don't need to have Alzheimer's. They don't need to have memory problems to participate in that. They can just have plain and simple vanilla sleep apnea. They would call 520-621-3805 or 520-621-3805.
Okay. And so if someone is interested, who's listening, that would like to find out more about these studies and be a participant in them and obviously get some research done on your specific situation, whether it's insomnia or hypersomnia, or whether in the other study, if you have sleep apnea and want to participate and get some free services like CPAP and dental things, those are the two things. Again, those numbers are, if you want to be in the long COVID, insomnia, and excessive sleepiness, that's 520-626-1590. And if you'd like to be engaged in the sleep apnea study, that is 520-621-3805. And if you need those numbers and didn't jot them down and need them, you can call Matt in the studio and we can relay those to you. He can give us a message and we can get those numbers to you. So when we come back after the break, we'll talk a little bit more about studying sleep and mental health and all the things that you do in your department and the wonderful doctors that you have there that are studying one-third of our life, sleeping one-third of the time you're a human being. You sleep for one-third of it. You're listening to The Morning Voice on KVOI. Make sure you get some Slice and Ice today at Slice and Ice. Ed Irving's still here, and he's over there talking with Matt in the behind the glass, as they say. And we'll be back in just a minute to talk some more about sleeping and how important sleep is to the human being. Again, you're listening to The Morning Voice on KVOI. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. Matt's playing some sleep music for us, Mr. Sandman and sleep. And that's because we're talking about one of the most important things that human beings do is sleep a third of their life. Our guests are from the University of Arizona, where we're talking about wonder and the good things that are happening at the U of A. One of those things is sleep research and finding out how to help people get better night's sleep. Our guest this morning is Dr. Sai Parthasarathy. I did it wrong again. Parthasarathy. Thank you very much. I got it right that time. I told you I wasn't going to mess it up this time, and then I did right when I said that. So you are a sleep doctor. So you sleep while you doc. No, you're a sleep doctor, which means you are looking, you and your 33 doctors are working out of the U of A Health Sciences Center to improve sleep in people. And one of those important areas, you know, we've talked about the two clinical trials. And again, if you're interested in a clinical trial for long COVID, that number is 520-626-1590. If you have insomnia or excessive sleepiness based on long COVID, that's the number to call. And if you are have sleep apnea and you want to be involved in that study, that number is 520-621-3805. Or you can always call the studio and Matt will write down your name and we'll get you a contact there. And that number is 520-790-2040. These are important studies. But tell us a little bit about how poor sleep impacts mental health and what steps people can take to improve their sleep quality.
Yeah, there's a very strong tie between sleep and mental health. For example, for depression, we find in epidemiological studies, when they look at a cohort of people, people with insomnia can develop depression down the road. So that means there's something about sleep derangement that happens first, and then it sets the stage for depression. And there are some researchers at the center, at the University of Arizona Health Sciences Center for Sleep, Circadian Neurosciences, that are actually doing research on just that, about how you're mulling over these thoughts when you're having insomnia at night of what happened during the day. And that is not healthy, because when you ruminate like that, and when you make those thoughts, you know, they talk about how you do mental imagery of how you go into a happy place so that you can actually have happy thoughts. That's because when you have a certain imaging that you're doing and certain thoughts that you're doing, it's almost like walking on a grass knoll, well laid out manicured lawn. If you keep walking over the grass on a particular path, you'll start creating a path. And so if you have some bad thoughts and you keep repeating those thoughts, you end up making those neurons that are making those bad thoughts sort of make it more firmer, that it becomes a clear path when previously that path didn't exist. So it sort of gives you that opportunity for doing that. And that's why they say it's a slippery slope. Don't go down those thoughts. Now, if someone has insomnia and they had some bad, you know, thing happen to them during the day, they keep doing that. That's because their brain is rewiring itself, just like how the path that you create by trampling on a lawn. You are wiring your brain to actually have those kinds of thoughts. So maybe that's one mechanism, because the mind is at work, you know, during that time, and it shouldn't be. It should be getting that rest, and it should not be replaying those memories and reiterating and making more firm those slippery slope thoughts. And so there are researchers actually doing that, you know, the Mind at Night research at the center at the University of Arizona. But the other thing is that we find that, you know, when you look at people having, you know, thoughts of harming themselves and such, I mean, it happens more at night.
Right.
And then another major piece of research is that, as I mentioned earlier, there's circadian rhythms, which keeps the biological clock. And that actually tells us when we should sleep and when we should be awake. And that biological clock is delayed in people with depression. How did they find that? They actually took donated brains of people with major depression who had passed, and they found that these donated brains had genetic signatures which suggests that these people have a delayed brain clock. So what this means is that there's a very close tie between circadian rhythms and sleep and depression, and therefore it's very important from a mental health standpoint that we do something about sleep, good quality sleep, timing, duration, so that those sleep alterations don't set the stage or the milieu for someone to develop mental health problems down the road.
And even as a person is being aware and learning about their own sleep patterns and so forth, I guess, and even in my own case, since I do sleep a third of my life, once you become aware of that you're making that path, then your brain can kind of help you stop making that path. You can kind of, even though you're asleep per se, but if you're in that fog of early wake up or late going to sleep, you can force your brain to not think about those things and think about something else and force you in a different path so that you're not wiring those neurons to be thinking about this full time 24/7 at 8 hours while you're sleeping, right?
Absolutely. And that's very important that you rechannel those brain thoughts into more positive thoughts. And
right.
So that's why there's a lot of psychological techniques and approaches and cognitive behavioral therapy for depression, where they try to divert those thoughts. Whenever you start going down that slippery slope, it's to redirect those, and that requires will and requires conscious will for someone mm-hmm. to redirect it. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's you know, it's a way that can be managed.
Yeah, and like you say, you don't want to go down the slippery slope of causing yourself to go over the same thing over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. That just leads to poor sleep, leads then to poor mental health, and that can be that slippery slope of all other problems that could, you know, associated with that. So many people struggle with maintaining a consistent sleep schedule. What are some of the techniques that you teach and recommendations that you give people at the U of A Health Sciences Center for Sleep, Circadian, and Neurosciences Research? How do you tell them to get a good night's sleep? What is your, just the average person, how do you get a good night's sleep?
I mean, there's a whole bunch of them, and I would say that they're all put down into a constellation of something called sleep hygiene. So just like how we have dental hygiene and so on and so forth, there is sleep hygiene. So the idea is not to eat dinner close to bedtime, not to use alcohol as a sedative agent to help someone fall asleep. If someone's going to have a dinner, it should be 4 hours before bedtime, so something like 6 o'clock. And having a glass of wine with dinner is perfectly okay, but not a nightcap to help, fall asleep. Mm-hmm. Not looking at iPhones or, LED displays while people are in bed, but we tend to do that. We are
even heard maybe an hour before you should shut down the thing. Give your eyes and your brain a chance to...
So technically 4 hours before. And so there are people who put like these blue light screens and things of that nature. But the other issue is that if they mentally stimulate their brain,
right,
even by cutting out the blue light, they're going to rev up the brain and then suddenly say, okay, you're going 70 miles an hour. Now
go to sleep.
Yeah. Now go to sleep.
can't do it. Yeah.
So it's important not to take like chocolate or hot cocoa or... tea that has caffeine in it. So if they're going to have something, they should have decaffeinated tea or decaffeinated coffee. But then decaffeinated stuff also has a little bit of caffeine. It's not like it's devoid of caffeine. So you really have to look at what product that you're having. Not exercising close to bedtime, because that revs up all the catecholamines, the flight, fight, fright hormones. And then you're saying, hey, brain, go to sleep in the soup of hormones, when actually... you want it to have a very mellow time period. One of the things that they can do, maybe a warm bath close to bedtime. Some people find having a warm glass of milk may help them, although we've not been able to prove it. If it works for people, it works for people. But
what about reading a good quiet book that's not getting y'all revved up, but just reading something?
Absolutely. So, I would say more like a coffee table book or something like that. Something that is not very mentally stimulating. But exercising during the day is very, very key. Exercising in the morning or afternoon can significantly improve the nighttime sleep quality.
Well, we'll have you back because we're going to get some of your other doctors in and talk about sleep and other things that you guys are working on. We appreciate you coming in and all the great things you do at the U of A and sending us wonderful doctors. If you want to be part of the studies, give us a call at the studio, 790-2040, and we'll get you hooked up with one of those sleep studies. And thank you very much, Dr. Tsai, for coming in. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're listening to Wonder on The Morning Voice. We'll be back after the break with another success story. So we look forward to that. And thank you again, Dr. Tsai, for being here. You're listening to The Morning Voice. Welcome back to The Morning Voice on KVOI. We've had a great morning. We talked with Ed Irving, who is...
Dr. Ed, I got to say, what an interesting guy.
Yeah.
And, he's like... he's like one of those people that everybody's happy to see.
Yeah.
How can you not be happy with great grinder sandwiches and Italian ice? So, to go through life as being like people are happy when you show up. What a great place to be in life.
I have a funny story to tell you about Ed and his wife. His youngest son was in the boys' chorus. And so his wife, Suzanne, was very active because if you join the boys' chorus, you'd have kind of a pretty the family joins too. It's not just the kid. And so they had this little auction, and one of the auction items was I believe it was free EGs for a year is what it was. And so it was just a bunch of certificates that it was basically based on a 12-month thing, and my family bought it. And so my little guys, I have two sons that are age now 33 and 30, they would go from school to the Tucson Boys course and practice, and then they would have to jump in the car and change into their football outfits and go to football. And so they'd be, after school, they'd be 3 or 4 hours doing their thing. And since we had these cards, we would run, my wife would, or the grandparents would run them by EGs, and they would get their EGs, and they did that literally for an entire year because we had this EGs for a year. They love it. And my son that lives in Minneapolis, still when he flies into Tucson, wants to stop from the airport and grab an EGs. Now it's got to be slice and ice now.
So
so it's great. Ed's great, and you know, when you think about what they built in EG's over the last 50 years, and now him starting with this new slice of ice, that's pretty powerful testimony to great contribution to our economy. Everybody knows what EG's is in Tucson, and now everybody knows what slice and ice is going to be. So,
and we were sharing motorcycling stories. I don't currently, but you know, I'd definitely like to get back into it at some point. But you know, cross country motorcycle rides, and just he's got a million great stories, and he reminded me about a bunch of neat things that me and my buddy did when we were taking long road trips on our bikes. So that was really interesting, just having an opportunity to chat with him for a few minutes.
No, and he has that unique story where he was on his bike when he developed some eyesight issues.
I got the details on that one.
That was a little bit scary there. To be on your bike and have your vision go. I guess when you're riding a bike, a motorcycle, you should probably be able to see, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, and he survived. But he used to drive his bike to work every once in a while, and you'd see his Harley or whatever. You know, he had bikes, so whatever you would see. It was kind of interesting to have him be driving around in Tucson on his bike. So, great guy. So we do encourage people to go to Slice and Ice. He's one of our, he's going to be one of our new advertisers. I was laughing with him about Chip Travers, who's our good friend that we've known for a zillion years, was at EG's as helping with their marketing and advertising. All their graphics at Slice and Ice are done by Chip. Chip Travers is a good friend of ours, and their location is at 1905 West Grant Road, and they got a new one coming online in about 60 days, at 6810 East Tankaverde. Where's that located?
Communal Principal. There's a Dairy Queen there, and
it's on the south side.
Bosa Donuts, and
yeah, south side of the street, yeah. And it's Communal Principal, so that's where the second Slice and Ice is. And I kind of predict there's going to be more of those coming up.
Can't wait to try it. Yeah. Matter of fact, I was telling them on the way out, I'm grabbing my buddy who I did all my motorcycle riding with, and I told him I'm grabbing him. We're going to come out and have a sandwich or a slice of pizza or something out there and
talk to him.
His current one.
Yeah, because Ed's there a lot. And,
yeah.
You can have some talk. So that's great. So Slice and Ice, a great success story here in Tucson. We also want to thank Moises Gomez. He had to jet out. He had his three young daughters with him. They had to get to school, and he's a young man that has done just great work in Tucson. Over at O'Reilly Chevrolet, then at a solar company. He has his own solar company. He has a restaurant down in Rocky Point. He's just been to my classes a couple of times to speak to my students about servant leadership. He's the epitome of volunteers. And that's one of the nice things about Tucson is the people that are in business, like Ed Irving, like Moises Gomez, who volunteer, give back to the community. That's really important in what we do in Tucson.
Absolutely. And there's all sorts of things you can do to get involved in Tucson. So, you know, we always joke a little bit about it, but it's a big, small town. But if you want to get involved in this community, there's so many ways to do that. So, yeah.
And you're an epitome of that. Your wife is obviously a big shot in the Angels.
Yeah, she just finished her year as chair. And of course, Angel Charity, if I can get a plug.
They've got an event coming up.
If you don't mind.
They?
Well, yeah. They just announced, so she was the general chair last year.
Right.
So, you know, every year they have a new leader. And it's, lather, rinse, repeat. They're off to the races again. They've already picked their recipients for this year. So they're going to, Big Brothers and Big Sisters of Southern Arizona is going to receive about $850,000 for a mentoring activity center. San Miguel High School is going to get $568,000 for student transportation. That's for their internship programs. That's giving these high school kids, right, real world, real business experience.
It's part of their curriculum.
Just like what you're doing with your students.
Yeah.
You know, you're giving them all getting them in front of people that are leading in the workforce right now.
And so those San Miguel students, actually, that's part of their school schedule. They go to class and then they go work somewhere.
It's a great program.
Yeah, awesome. It's been going on for years. And some of my peers who have businesses have really been great mentors to these young people, and they get to learn. And they're high school students, but they're getting a professional experience.
Well, they're learning people skills. You know, they're learning they can make mistakes now and learn lessons from them. You know, and build their resume. And I'm sure as you teach your students at U of A, and I'm sure Morgan could attest, you know, there's things that are in the book, but then when you get in the real world, you know, there's the real life application of it. And
one of the things I like about the kids at San Miguel, and we teach this obviously at the U of A, is the way they dress, the way they approach people, their body language, not looking at their phone while they're engaged on the internship, to be focused, to send thank you notes, all the social practices in business that you need to learn to be a good professional. Those you don't learn from a text. You learn those from seeing, doing, being. Morgan, we teach you that, right?
Yes, you do. I mean, also the value of what I'm doing now, the internship process, especially a lot of courses at the U of A require the internship just because it's so hard to get real life experience in a classroom. You can try really hard and you can teach things about it, but just that value of in person and experience like that, it's really helpful.
And so what are you learning from your internship? You laugh as we call you the CEO of Ackerley Advertising.
I'm learning how many factors play into advertising. That's right. One. I'm learning about relationships, how important those are. Right now,
I just took my headphones off about 10 minutes ago and said, it's amazing how Ed Irving and Moises Gomez and Dr. Tsai and people who... I guess I consider them my professional friends, how many people I know in this town who come here and they talk about their success story or talk about Wonder at the U of A. I know them because of the relationships that we've built over the years after being in business for 57 years. It's kind of what we're teaching you.
Yeah.
It's all about relationships. And that's what Moises said. It's all about connections.
Exactly. Yeah. And honestly, that's probably been my favorite part of the master's program that I'm going through, is being able to actually utilize this in person and get career experience from it.
That's great.
It's been really helpful.
And so, Matt, the $1.75 million that your wife was largely responsible for raising all by herself.
Well, they're raising that this year.
Oh, that's this year.
Yeah, that's this year. Okay. Last year, they raised about 1.3-ish.
Okay. And she raised that all by herself with no help.
No,
right?
A huge team. It's a huge team effort.
Yeah,
many hands make for light work.
Right? I just saw a post, I think it was this morning, that they've got another event coming up here pretty quick, right? And I think it's in April. They got something coming up. One of their angel charity events is coming up, so we'll have to look at that and certainly
get that in front of us. And I just wanted to comment on Dr. Partha Sarathi's work. You know, a few years ago, I jumped in to this line of work.
Rush, you did.
Right? And that
3 o'clock in the morning,
that
wake
involved
up, call.
A much different schedule than I was used to for the 30 years prior to that. And I think I've probably practiced every don't that the doctor talked about. But it is a learning curve you go through about, okay, you know, stop anything with the sugary, you know, at least a few hours before, because it's just going to not make things easier for you. And, you know, maybe after about 3 o'clock, think twice if you're going to have even a caffeinated soda, let alone a cup of coffee or something like that. So it was really interesting hearing him rattle through some of these that I've kind of figured out. I'm probably a prime candidate for one of his studies, to be honest with you.
Yeah, well, you know, even the fact that you text me at 9 o'clock at night and he says you should be off your devices for 4 hours. I mean, that would be 6 or 7 p.m. You'd have to shut them down. And hell, I'm still looking at mine at 11 o'clock
and
at night.
I don't do that a lot, but if I need to, I need to. And a mutual friend of ours who used to be up at like 1 or 2.
Zero dark 30. Yeah.
I remember swapping texts with him around 9 or 10 o'clock a couple of times. And I'm like, what in the world are you still doing up?
And not getting any sleep.
Good grief. Yeah.
It's important how important sleep is. And by the way, if you're interested in participating in the 2 sleep studies that the University of Arizona Health Sciences, March is Natural Sleep Awareness Month. And they have 2 studies. They're looking for some volunteers to help in that process. One is the insomnia and excessive sleepiness in people who have long COVID. So if you happen to have long COVID or know somebody that does and they're suffering with insomnia or excessive sleepiness, that's one study. And the other study that Dr. Tsai was talking about is a sleep apnea and Alzheimer-related proteins in the blood. And both of those they're looking for volunteers. So if you happen to be that person and want to get some free analysis and some treatments and so forth that they offer in those studies, it's the sleep apnea one sounded pretty interesting. They give you not only CPAP help and get you set on that, but they also have the dental implant devices that they're working on and some other ways to help you manage your sleep apnea. So if you're interested in those, you can call us here at the studio, 520-790-2040, and we'll get you hooked up with those surveys and get you to the right place. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up this beautiful Friday, the last Friday of February. Amazing that we're already at the
last
Friday.
Can you believe that already? 2 months down? That's crazy.
And we just, it seems like we just started the Morning Voice, and here we go. We're wrapping up the month. So you're listening to the Morning Voice on KVOI. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back to the Morning Voice. Bill Ackerley's here. Morgan Murphy's here. Matt Neely's here. And I'm Dr. Ed Ackerley, your host. We're wrapping up the month of February. Can't believe it. It's already over with. We start March tomorrow, and we'll be into the spring, the official spring, Easter season. We have a Fat Tuesday on Tuesday, Ash Wednesday on Wednesday, 40 days to Easter. Believe it or not, we're counting down as we go. So, Morgan, we're doing quite a bit of work on the Morning Voice. You've been doing great.
Yes.
We want to thank Dr. Sy and Roman and Bill Netherton and lots of people who've been helping us book guests on the show. It's been a sprint, hasn't it? It's been pretty amazing.
Yes, it has. Yes, very enjoyable though. I've actually, this is completely brand new to me, and so writing all these, you know, show runs, getting all these people on the show, it's been a learning experience, but it's been really fun.
Yeah, you even got to host a show yourself.
I did.
So tell us a little bit about how we're promoting with Facebook and Instagram and what's going on there.
Absolutely. So we have a page on Facebook. If you just look up The Morning Voice, should pop right up. If you want to give that a like or a follow, go ahead. We'll be showing some people that are going to be on the show, some people that have been on the show. I just started it, so we only have one post going on, but we should have one right after this as well.
Yeah.
And then I also have, we have an Instagram up and running. So if you look up The Morning Voice Tucson on Instagram, you'll find us there as well. And it'll provide an easy link to our website where you can actually sign up or schedule an interview or submit an inquiry to schedule one.
We encourage businesses and nonprofit organizations that are doing good work and have a success story to tell to give us a shout. And we have our show is Fridays, and we do success in the first hour and wonder in the second hour. And of course, we have four other shows. We have Lydia Randa, Rainmakers on Monday, which talks about culture and education and empowerment and small business, which is a great show. If you haven't caught that one, Lydia does a great job. On Tuesday, our good friend General Ted Maxwell does a great job with civic engagement, and he calls it the engagement hour, where he encourages people to be involved. He says,
you don't have to get engaged.
You don't have to get engaged. No, if you can be single. Yeah. You can be single. And yeah.
Civic engagement.
Civic engagement. And then we have on Wednesday, Grant Kruger does Food for Thought and talks about restaurant tours, and of course he's the owner of Union Public House, Proof, Reforma, and the Maverick, and so he's an expert on what's it like to operate a restaurant here in Tucson, but also very active politically supporting business in Tucson and Southern Arizona. And then on Thursday, our friend Tom Moulton, sponsored by our good friend Felipe Garcia at Visit Tucson, talks about all the great things you can do in Southern Arizona. Just yesterday, our good friend Russell True was on with him, and Russell is, of course, the owner of White Stallion Ranch. He and his family have done a great job of making that they've recently won the USA poll of being the number one family vacation in the United States, so it's a pretty powerful thing, so we appreciate what Russell does. And so anybody that's interested in being on The Morning Voice, they should jump on either the Facebook page or go to our website.
Exactly, yep. And we have links to our website from both the Facebook and the Instagram. So if you want to follow us, our Instagram is at The Morning Voice Tucson, and our Facebook, it's a page, The Morning Voice.
The Morning Voice. And
fantastic.
So this is good to have. And so if you know of somebody that should be interviewed or on one of the five shows, or if there's somebody that you think we should reach out to, you'd just like to hear about and you'd like to have them interviewed and learn some more about them. It was kind of cool to see Ed Irving and hear about the genesis of Slice and Ice and how he's building that company. And, you know, he's just a young man now building another company after 50 years in the business. It's amazing.
What a great opportunity to do an encore like that.
Right. Not very many people get that chance. And he's got some great buildings coming up that might be filled with Slice and Ice. So put two and two together there. It's pretty
perfect
amazing.
Time for the summer.
Yeah.
Amen.
It's going to be so hot. Yeah. Yesterday was the first time in Phoenix this year. It hit 90 degrees in Phoenix.
Right.
So it's going to be
the ice will break on the Santa Cruz here before too long, and it'll be 100 degrees. That's a good reason to go to the Pad, which is one of our new advertisers and clients, the Pad down
there. Indoor pickleball.
Indoor
pickleball. You don't have to be hot outside anymore playing pickleball.
Andrew and Reba Mackey have opened the Pad down on Tule Avenue. They've got 9 indoor pickleball courts.
What are those 7 other courts called?
They're called Padel.
But, okay, paddle. I'm going to have paddle. To learn.
Yeah, but the Americanos call it paddle ball. So. Well, this is great. What a great way to end February talking about great success stories and wonder at the University of Arizona. Our friend John Gordon is coming into town in April. We're going to be trying to engage him. He's fantastic, and we will be back with you. That was pretty funny. Well, thank you for that.
You need a new board op, I think.
Yeah, it's great. You're listening to The Morning Voice on KVOI, and we'll see you again next Friday, and stay tuned on Monday for Rainmakers with Lydia Aranda on The Morning Voice on KVOI.